I've been keeping this a secret for years now. It's rot inside my soul, but I couldn't care less if it spreads and eats me alive. I kept it inside me, nurtured it, and let it fester like a nasty cut. So now, you're probably asking, then why are you suddenly revealing this to us now? To be frank, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it's my hero complex. That was the original reason why I trained to be an officer. I'm thinking maybe I could still warn you, alarm the public. But to be honest, I just probably want to convince myself that I still draw breath for a reason. My name is Lance Becker. Not that it matters. I just think it's polite to know a stranger's name before a stranger's story. I used to work in a police station 10 years ago. Now, I own a bookstore near my apartment. I told the chief that I was leaving because I wanted to pursue my artistic calling to write. I want to inject colour in lifeless white canvases with every stroke and every scratch of a pen. That's the BS I told them, but I'm pretty sure they didn't buy it. If they did, they wouldn't still be watching me 24/7. No matter how much dirt you smear into those bumpers and windows, I know a discreet government car when I see one. You see, I left the force for a reason I'm not allowed to discuss. A reason I couldn't discuss. But I've moved past the sleepless nights and haunted visions. I'm ready to tell you what happened to Pap's Wall. It was June 26th, 2008. I was in charge of the night shift. Together with me at the station was my good friend, Brom, and the new girl, Joanne. Brom and I went way back in high school. We considered ourselves particularly ordinary. We grew up without any answers to what we want our future jobs to be. We never aspired of being a scientist, a programmer, or an athlete, but at least I had some semblance of a goal or a dream. I've always wanted to join the Justice League. Be a hero, you know. Well, you can figure out how that went down. When the time came where we'd have to answer the question for real, backed up in the corner, Brom and I simply just decided to join the police force. Joanne's story is quite different. She wanted this position. She had that bright, starry-eyed perspective of what it's like working as an officer. Didn't want to break it to her. She needed to figure that out herself. Not like that, though. Not that phone call. 2:35 a.m. We were all minding our business inside the station. The room would almost be pitch black if it wasn't for the warm light of our desk lamps. We'd only get up from our seats to use the bathroom, stretch, or fetch coffee. Brom occasionally threw things at me to keep himself entertained. Whether it be stupid dad jokes or peanuts, it was a 50-50. I needed a reason to turn my neck away from my computer anyway. It was a somewhat peaceful night. Until the phone beside me rang. Brom almost immediately groaned, because it meant we probably needed to do our actual jobs. Joanne perked up, like a puppy hearing a treat bag shaken up. Me, I flinched. I got surprised. I never expected a call at 2 a.m, so I had to take a deep breath to calm my suddenly racing heart before I could answer. The man's name was Peter. Peter Ingram. He was a resident of a small neighbouring town named Pap's Wall. The last time I checked, it had a population of only 300 or so. It was the seaside, so it was kind of a fishing place. People there were, traditionally, I like to say. Most of the town was still covered in wet soil, and the streets aren't made of concrete either. I only got to visit the town when I was a kid, and the only thing I remembered is the smell of fish in the air. They had their own police station, if I could remember correctly, so the call was very much odd and alarming. That wasn't what gave the situation away, though. It was the loud panting and panicked voice he had while talking to me. He was stuttering, catching his breath, and trying his best to relay the situation. I thought to myself, he must have killed someone. No, he might be in danger. Someone might want to hurt him. Was there a fire? A hostage situation? Is his family in danger, in need of an ambulance? It wasn't any of those things. A girl flew into the sky. That was word for word. What? I knee-jerkingly replied. He said that a girl was hoisted up to the sky. Lots of people saw it, he said, and she disappeared in the dark rumbling cloud above them. The clouds, he mentioned them in detail too. It was unlike the clouds you typically see outside. It was kind of a blanket. He told me it was just one big sheet, the size of the whole town. No stars, no moon, just clouds. I turned the loudspeaker on so the two people around me could take a listen. Maybe because I was waiting for Bram to say it. And, of course he did. It's a bloody prank, Bram sneered. I gave a flat smile. Sir, I would need more details of your situation, I asked. Bram was running his finger across his neck and shaking his head. Peter proceeded to recount what happened. He told me that he was simply taking a cigarette on his porch when people started running in the streets, shouting to get the residents inside their houses. He immediately complied out of panic. Within the safety of his windows, he saw a woman with her head up high, floating towards the clouds. Sir, I need you to stay put. Lock your doors. We'll be there shortly, I simply responded without a second thought. You mental? Bram raised his voice. He got up and walked towards me to place his finger at the mute button. This is a prank. He tilted and lowered his body to reach my face. You seriously want to drive out of town at 3 in the morning because the fish town gave birth to Supergirl? Before I could answer back with my own snarky comment, the phone call dropped. Bram raised his eyebrows as he stretched and went back to his seat. I don't know. It sounded like he really needed help. Joanne was standing up the whole time, rubbing the tip of her fingers. Her eyes looked at me, waiting for my response. Well, they shouldn't have hung up, I nonchalantly replied. Joanne hadn't got a chance to sit down yet when the phone rang again. I put it on speaker. Where are you guys? It's been 5 goddamn hours. We all stared at each other in confusion. It was Peter again. Only this time, his voice was shaking. The words couldn't escape his mouth anymore, unlike the first call. He sounded like his lips were quivering. Emily, my wife. He proceeded to moan and cry on the phone. I asked him what's wrong, and the words that came after were most bizarre at the time. Fish lines, they're hanging from the sky. He described the town to be ridden with hooks dangling 3 to 6 feet off the ground. They were all coming from the clouds, hovering above their town. They were spread unevenly, almost depending on the number of people nearby each house. All of our faces wrinkled in disgust as he proceeded to describe the supposed bait. He said the lines had fat, yellow worms pierced on each hook, resembling maggots the size of pups. They had beady black and blinking eyes decorated around its body. It dripped viscous fluid to the ground beneath them, making puddles all over the streets. My wife, Emily, Peter continued. She was looking out of the window. She said her father was still outside. Peter sobbed uncontrollably. So, did you get your father back in the house? Bram suddenly shouted from his desk, losing all sense of professionalism. I wouldn't blame him. At that point, we were all getting dragged in this person's narrative. No, you don't understand, Peter exhaled. Her father has been dead for years now. Silence blanketed the room. All I heard from Peter was mumbling at that point. I looked at Joanne and Bram, and it was easy to tell that we all got a little spooked out. I focused again and started to tell Peter to calm down. He continued. After Pete's wife went to open their front door, he said that she immediately ran towards one of the hooks and grabbed the worm. She let it crawl inside her mouth, as Peter said, letting it squirm and go bulging down on her throat, down to her chest, and disappear inside her stomach. The fishing line was all that remained on her slime-drenched lips. So, before Peter could chase her down, the line tensed and whirred, making a sound of a strung guitar string, before hoisting her wife up like she weighed nothing and disappeared into the clouds. Peter told us that he was in shock, and he didn't realize he was walking towards another hook. His neighbor from across the street shouted at him and snapped him out of it. His neighbour then proceeded to throw a walkie-talkie at him, which Peter carried back inside the house. "That was my good pal, Billy," he explained. "I'm talking to him through the walkie. He told me that the Hooks are reeling in tons of people from the town. Dozens are going up by the minute. Like idiots, they get themselves snagged to be dragged up like dolls. I'm scared, officer. I'm just really, really..." Peter continued to sob on the line.
"We need to go,"
Joanne interrupted.
"Well, you're full of beans. To where? The whole damn thing seems a bit dodgy to me,"
Rom tried to refute.
"They need help. We need to do something."
"What?
Something? Do you even know what the hell is going on? I don't."
Rom was on the brink of shouting. They raised their voice higher, inching towards each other, trying hard to make the other person back down. I was as confused as both of them, but I had to intervene.
"We're going," I said.
Although almost whispering, they both paused and looked at me. Rom was taking a deep breath, ready to say something that would probably have led me to a different decision. But I said no before the words could even climb out of his chest. The light from our lamps wasn't enough to reveal the sweat beading on our foreheads, but also how our shoulders stiffened, how Joanne kept touching her buttons, and how Brom kept biting the skin off his lips. We were all wrapped around the sudden anxiety that we failed to notice that Peter had already dropped the call. We felt the seconds of just sitting around press heavily on our chest.
"Okay," I gathered my thoughts. "Joanne, keep an eye on the phone. Contact the neighboring town's police departments. Innsmouth, come with me."
"I can go," Joanne stopped me from fetching the keys from the rack.
"Well, she wants to go," Brom nervously smiled.
I gave Brom a meaningful glare, one that would etch the seriousness of the situation on his damn skull. I left the front door and started the car. Brom entered the vehicle almost in a trance. He kept bouncing his leg the moment he sat down, silently looking at the dark road ahead of us. I had no words to say during the drive either. It was an hour-long drive to the town, but it felt like we came there much sooner than we wanted to be. I let out a deep sigh upon stopping at the road sign. "Welcome to Papswell, population 652. From our car, we saw windows and street lamps lit warm yellow-orange amidst the dark and blue night. It was peaceful, quiet. We didn't want quiet, however. We both froze in place, unable to move a foot in front of another, seemingly wanting for the first one to take the lead.
"Hello?"
Brom shouted as loudly as I could. I jumped, felt as if I was about to vomit my heart out.
"Hello? Someone? This is Ash..."
"Brom," I called him out, whispering.
"The hell are you doing?"
"I don't want to go. I don't." His voice started to crack. He walked around in circles, his hands behind his neck. He then looked up. I knew it was to push the tears back in, but I decided to shut up about it. Instead, I gave the most convincing chuckle I could pull out of my ass.
"Dude, come on. It's probably just a prank, right?"
I smiled at him. He smiled back, enough to give me a bit of comfort, enough to push myself to walk past the first sign. Walking forward, the salty scent of the sea welcomed us with a cold hug. The people of the town, however, never gave us the same courtesy. The houses were all lit up, but not a single shadow can be seen inside the windows. The front doors were wide open. They creaked and slammed, almost in sync, matching our every step on the soft, wet land. Brom's gun was pointed at every corner I shined my light. I was honestly getting more nervous about accidentally getting shot by him due to his nervous and snappy movements and heavy breaths. I looked back and he was sweating like a horse, despite the cold breeze. I wasn't a tough nut myself. I just needed to put a front until we met someone. Anyone.
"Hey, look, Lance. No Hooks from the sky."
"Yeah, no Hooks." Honestly, I wasn't so sure if that was good or bad. We'd made some distance going inside the town. Our steps made crunching noises on the rocky ground, so I looked back
when I heard that Brahm wasn't taking any more steps. When I checked, he was looking down, his eyes wide open and his hands almost loose, ready to drop the gun. "What's wrong?" I asked. I approached him and shined my light at his feet. My jaw slowly dropped, so did my heart. It was the puddle. The white, glistening pool of gunk. Brahm raised his foot and the liquid dripped down off it like snot. I looked around and it was everywhere. Every 6 feet, puddles of slime. And if our memory served us right, we both knew where it came from. "I think we should leave," Brahm mumbled, and I couldn't have agreed more. I grabbed his arm and pulled him away from being fixated on the puddle. We briskly walked back, past several empty houses, yet the sign nor the car was nowhere to be found. We started to walk faster, slowly transitioning to a sprint, until we caught ourselves running. We never took a turn, yet it felt like we were lost. The houses, the streetlights, the roads, and the puddles all looked the same. I was panicking. I kept on looking back to make sure Brahm was still following me. The last thing I'd want is to be alone in that godforsaken place. At that point, we both knew that something weird was going on. We were going around in circles. The town seemed alive, morphing itself to keep us in. We just didn't want to acknowledge it. So, we kept running. Even broke the most logical thing to do and started taking turns, left and right, looking for something different, an establishment, a shop, anything. But it was the same old empty wooden houses everywhere. We stopped to catch our breath. Brahm fell to his knees, digging his hands in the dirt. "Lance, what's happening?" He started to burst out in tears. I looked around while grabbing the hair from the back of my head, looking for a sign, looking for a way out, when something caught both of our attention. A phone was ringing inside the house on our left. "Where are you going? Someone might be able to help us," I replied. I pulled my gun out and pointed at the front door before kicking it in. I didn't need to. The door opened up by itself because of the wind, almost causing me to lose my balance from trying to kick it and trip. I called out for anyone inside the house. No response. I slowly approached the phone. It was a dirty white with a pink hand-stitched holder at its handle. I took a deep breath and answered. What blasted on my ears was the sound of a grating scream coming from a woman. "No, hello? Please stay put." I pulled back a little before I could recognize the voice. "Joanne?" I replied. "Becca?" she replied. "How are you there?" "We're at Papswall." "But how? You just left minutes ago." Everything was starting to spin around me. "What?" I asked her. "Lance, the sign." Brahm called for me outside. It felt like a knife was pulled out from my chest. My smile was almost ear to ear. "Joanne, have you been calling the neighbouring stations?" No answer. The call already dropped. I didn't have time to think about what happened and simply ran outside the house and followed Brahm sprinting towards the car. When I got in to start the engine, I noticed that he was still standing outside the car, looking at the town. I lowered the window to call him inside, but he wasn't answering. I got out of the car again. "Brahm, let's go," I called out. I looked into the direction he was staring at and saw it. Something was glistening in the distance, just beneath a street lamp. "Mom?" he muttered. Every hair on my body stood up. "Brahm, are you okay?" I got nervous, especially when I saw him take a couple of steps forward. My heart dropped seeing him lean over, ready to run back to town. The adrenaline kicked in, causing me to grab and wrap my arms around him before he could start chasing after whatever that was. "Brahm, Brahm, your mom's not here. She's back in England, remember?" I whispered into his ear, holding him as he struggled. After a few seconds, he started to calm down. He looked at me, confused as to why we were at the ground. "Yeah, she is." We went inside the car and had a silent trip back to the station. We were still trying to process everything. I hadn't even told Brom about what happened when I answered the phone. He seemed lost in his thoughts that he never cared to ask anyway. We got back to the station around 4 a.m. It was dark, but the sun was starting to peak on the horizon. When we arrived at the station, Brom asked me to go ahead inside. He wanted some time alone in the car. The feeling of confusion and dread still followed me inside the station. It didn't help that everything was so quiet. The only sound that could be heard was the buzzing of the air conditioner. I found Joanne standing and staring blankly beside my desk while holding the phone on her shoulders. "Joanne?" I called her. I grabbed her hand to receive the phone and put it down. She flinched the moment I touched her. Her eyes welled up and her legs started to get weak, almost causing her to fall on the floor. I was ready to catch her, but she quickly grabbed my desk and stood back up herself. No words were spoken between the three of us for the rest of the shift. It was safe to say that none of us got some proper sleep after going home too. The next day, men in suits were swarming inside the station. The chief called me in and told me that some guys wanted to talk to me for an interview, to talk to the three of us. The suits called us one by one in the interrogation room. Inside were four folders, one for each of our names, and another labelled Case 7. They had their way with words, but to dumb it all down, all I heard was, "Shut up about it, or die." It was pretty obvious to me that they had no idea what was happening either, or at least aren't in any control of what happened. What they do have control over, however, is information. This was 10 years ago, and as far as I know, the town of Popswell was erased from the face of the earth. I heard it was nothing but a barren wasteland now. It's not on the internet, nor any map you could find. No one would ever remember its name, except for the three of us, I guess. Brom was the first one to resign, went back to England to stay with his family. I resigned after, having to see the phone beside me every day became too much for me to handle. Joanne, she stayed, but I never heard from her for a long time. This kind of thing sticks with you. It haunts your very core. Nothing you can do about it. You can't escape. So I let it eat me. It ate me up like maggots. Even though the suits tried their best, I still managed to save something from what happened. I got a copy of the recording of the calls. It was my own sick, masochistic idea of trying to remember the 652 people that disappeared that day. I still play the recordings on loop before I go to sleep, but not all of them. Not until recently. Maybe this is the reason why I decided to tell this story. Why I decided to scratch the itch a little. Not to warn you of large clouds and dangling hooks, no. But because Joanne sent me something. Something I didn't need to hear. Maybe I just want someone, you, to take a glimpse at the horror we've been through. Not so much of a hero now, am I? I didn't need to know. I didn't need to hear the call that Joanne received that night after Brahm and I left the station. But there's no point in crying over spilled milk. The suits are coming for me now after this anyway. So I just let it eat me. Let it eat my soul. And let it eat my sanity, or what's left of it. Start playback of recording, 26/06/2008, 3:06 a.m. Click. Joanne. "Good morning, Ashbury Police Department." Peter. "Hello, I was talking to Billy over the walkie, and he told me there might be a way out of..." Static. "Sir, Mr. Ingram?" "Oh God, Billy's kid. He's outside. He's running towards a hook." "No, Joey, stop. Mr. Ingram, whatever you do, please stay put." "He grabbed his son. They're both being pulled up. Oh God." Click. Static. Billy, let go. Silence. Click. Static. Billy? Sir? From the walkie. Peter, I... Who are you people? Billy, where are you? What's happening up there? Hello? Indistinct screeching. What was that? Nothing matters now, Peter. What are you talking about? Sobbing, laughter. Billy? Silence. It's real, Peter. It exists. And it looks hungry. Click. End of recording.